From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, March 20th, 2026.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 26 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Campaigns and political committees have already spent more than $37 million on Maine's pivotal U.S. Senate race, including $1.4 million just this week. Steve Missler has more.
The analysis by Ad Impact includes super PACs, dark money groups, and the candidate campaigns. And with 8 months left until the November election, the spending is on pace to beat the state record set 6 years ago in the Senate race of more than $200 million. This time, the spending has been accelerated by a hotly contested Democratic primary between leading contenders Governor Janet Mills and Graham Plattner. Both are vying for the chance to take on Republican Senator Susan Collins, and this week released several TV ads. Collins' spending has been modest so far, but she's already getting a boost from the Pine Tree Results Super PAC, financed by well-heeled donors, as well as the dark money group One Nation. One Nation is the biggest spender so far, booking more than $15 million in so-called issue ads that talk up Collins' ability to secure federal funding. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The Trump administration says it will conduct a compliance review of Maine's requirement that health insurance plans cover abortion care. As Patty White reports, Governor Janet Mills is calling the review a facade aimed at restricting abortion access.
The Office of Civil Rights in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services notified Maine's Superintendent of Insurance of the compliance review on Thursday. In a letter, the office says it has sufficient authority and cause to investigate whether Maine is violating federal conscience laws by coercing entities into providing and paying for abortion care. It's asking the state to provide data for its investigation within 20 days. In a written statement, Governor Mills vowed to defend reproductive rights in Maine and accused President Trump of, quote, pulling every lever of the federal government to hurt women and undermine our fundamental rights. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Officials for RSU 16 in Poland, Minot, and Mechanic Falls say they're taking steps to address concerns about high levels of carbon dioxide in schools. Superintendent Amy Hediger said in a written statement that elevated levels were discovered a year ago. Hediger says the Maine Department of Labor recommended that the district maintain levels just below 2,000 parts per million by opening windows, rotating classrooms, and improving ventilation when feasible. Hediger says the district is going a step further by installing CO2 monitors. The most recent readings posted online for elementary and middle schools show levels are below the benchmark. The school board recently approved HVAC upgrades this summer for Minot Consolidated School. District residents will vote in June on whether to approve funding for HVAC upgrades for other schools. The University of Maine is proposing to increase tuition by about 4%. That's after the university projected a nearly $18 million budget shortfall in December and asked all departments to cut expenses by 7%. Officials are also proposing a 4% increase to room and board fees. The proposal includes some staff cuts, but officials say fewer than 10 positions will be eliminated. The final budget will be voted on by the System Board of Trustees in May. The University of New England held its so-called Match Day ceremony Friday in Portland, where 166 graduating medical students learned where they will do their residencies. Maine has a physician shortage, especially in rural areas. 13 UNE residents will stay in Maine. 6 of those will serve in rural areas. Malia Sawtell is going to Maine Medical Center for its rural psychiatry program.
I'm getting to match into the specialty that I fell in love with during my rotations, but that I get to stay in an area where I'll be able to have both support for my family, but also be able to help support the rural population.
84 UNE med students are entering primary care residencies. Dozens of Maine sugar houses will be celebrating a successful harvest this weekend with pancake breakfasts, discounted maple products, and syrup-making demonstrations. As Michael Livingston reports, maple producers say this year's weather conditions were favorable.
At Green Maple Farm in Sebago, steam fills a cozy wood shack as syrup bubbles away over a wood fire. Owner Alan Green and his family are expecting hundreds of visitors this Maine Maple weekend. Green says despite the drought conditions, the cold winter was ideal for maple trees to start releasing sap in early March.
It seems like we're going back into an older weather pattern that we used to be in. And whether or not that holds up, who knows? You know, we're entirely at the mercy of Mother Nature. It's about the most weather-dependent agricultural crop there is.
Green says Maine Maple Weekend offers the public a way to appreciate the process from tree to bottle. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
The Wabanaki Alliance last night hosted its first ever gubernatorial candidate forum. None of the 8 Republican candidates took part, but 5 Democrats and 3 independents addressed a range of questions, from tribal sovereignty to teaching Wabanaki history in schools. Executive Director Molly Ann Bryant moderated much of the event in Houlton. I spoke with her about the significance of a political forum focused on tribal issues.
We were really able to work together as united Wabanaki tribal nations to drill into these subjects with the candidates. And it felt great to have a full room of tribal citizens, tribal leaders, and then a lot of community members that are interested in these things and want to hear from these candidates. So that's really heartening for a lot of us who have been in this work for a while, and we can remember a time where these issues never bubbled up to this level of discussion and consideration when people are thinking about who they'd like to vote for.
So 8 candidates participated, 5 Democrats and 3 independents. They all expressed some level of support for recognizing full tribal sovereignty, and that would be a departure, right, from both the position of Governor Janet Mills' administration and past governors. What's your reaction to that shift?
It was really great to hear. So we've been working on this set of recommendations from a tribal and state task force from 2019. And the bulk of our work has been around the recommendations from this bipartisan collaborative task force, where everyone agreed in these consensus recommendations, like, yes, we need to change the Settlement Act in a big way. We need to redefine this relationship. We need to modernize this document. And it's been frustrating in the 5 years since, where the big sweeping efforts or the access to federal laws were kept out of. It's such a huge obstacle in this administration to clear that hurdle. We've been able to get smaller pieces done, and those are beneficial to the tribes, and we're happy with that work and the agreements we can come to. But it is beyond time to shake this whole thing up, to amend that 1980 Act, and to hear really broad support for all of that is so heartening.
At the same time, you know, none of the Republican candidates participated in the forum. What do you make of that?
I think it signals their priorities. I think if this was an issue that they feel their voters cared about, they would probably make an effort to be there. And that's really too bad. And it's also, it's okay, because the Wabanaki Alliance is working really hard to make this matter to all Mainers. And I think we're making progress.
So in addition to sovereignty, what were some of the other key issues that candidates brought up at the forum?
We had a cool moment where we were able to spotlight our Wabanaki Youth Policy Initiative. So we've partnered with the Maine Environmental Education Association and a few others, and we've created this group of youth leads and youth delegates from tribal nations and from other places, other towns and cities throughout the state. And they were able to craft a question together, and it was all about Wabanaki studies. And we had all the candidates answer it. So they really got to think about our history as Mainers and as tribal people, and why this matters for everyone to learn it, and how to work that into statewide leadership.
So back to sort of the state level politics for a moment. Earlier this week, the Wabanaki leaders endorsed bills that would add new tribal representation to the Maine legislature, enhance certain tax exemptions, and create a commission to examine limitations on how federal laws currently apply to the tribal nations in Maine. How do you feel about these proposals and, in general, about the prospect of advancing the sovereignty push under the next governor, whoever that might be?
So I will say I've heard from tribal leadership that they feel that this bill will be beneficial. They don't feel it's a substitute for sovereignty. So the feeling in the room was sort of like, we've worked with the governor, here's the product. And from what I can gather, everyone is really committed to bringing this back under a more friendly administration to real, like the meat and potatoes of tribal sovereignty.
Molly Ann Bryant is the executive director of the Wabanaki Alliance. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.